Welcome to Grounded Wellness, your go-to podcast for simplified and trusted information on how to live a more non-toxic and holistic life. We're your hosts. I'm Bethany McDaniel, founder of Primally Pure, biohacking enthusiast and mom of three.
And I'm Courtney O'Connor, holistic esthetician with over 15 years experience in the healing power of touch and holistic skincare rituals.
In today's episode, I had the pleasure of sitting down with Mark McAfee, founder of Raw Farm, the world's largest raw dairy farm. When it comes to raw milk, you might have some questions. Some people passionately believe that raw milk is dangerous and that it should be illegal, while others think that it's a superfood everyone should be drinking. So where does the truth lie? This conversation is a fascinating dive into the world of raw milk, the legal controversy surrounding it, and why I wholeheartedly believe that raw milk done the right way is a perfectly healthy whole food. Let's dig in. Mark, welcome to Grounded Wellness. Thank you for being here. So excited to chat with you about raw milk today.
I'm glad to be here in your beautiful pasture.
I know.
Great venue.
Second or third podcast you've done on a farm. I know you do them all the time.
But... And the first one barefooted.
Yeah.
This is all good.
We've got a first in there. I love it. So you are under a personal injunction with the FDA not to talk about raw milk or the benefits of raw milk, I should say, on your company's channels. But since we are on the Grounded Wellness podcast, you're able to talk about raw milk. Tell us the benefits of raw milk.
The FDA thinks I'm really special. They singled me out to make sure I didn't speak
about it. They love
you. Raw milk is the first food of life. A baby is born, does not have an immune system. The gastrointestinal tract is basically devoid of bacteria. There's no diversity of bacteria. There's no food to feed the bacteria. The umbilical cord is cut and the baby's on its own. What's it do? It goes and nurses from mom. That's raw milk. And it is qualitatively, in other words, the kind of cream, the kind of protein, the kinds of enzymes are practically identical between cows and humans. And mankind's been consuming raw milk for about 15,000 years. And so it's only been about the last 80 years where it's been treated in such a way to lose all of those really important blueprints of life, those bioactives that are so powerful and health-giving. And they've just been not talked about in the pasteurized community. Well, the dollar voting is talking about it now because people are buying less and less, and it's going a decline of about 2 to 10% per year, depending on what market you're looking at.
Pasteurized milk is.
Pasteurized milk. However, our raw milk is growing at 1% a week. Unbelievable. Because of the interest in this first food of life and the fact that what's its job? To build an immune system that did not exist before. Remember that immune system is 80% made up of the gut microbiome, the bacteria, and the food that feeds it. And the structure is the mucosal lining. And so when your gut is well, you're well. Inflammation's in check. And post-COVID, people are looking for that food because they no longer want to be caught with their immune systems down, right? They want to be ready and adaptive and resilient to the next threat coming through health, not through some shot or something.
Yeah.
And
I'm so glad that people are now thinking that way, because when COVID was happening, everyone was just had the mindset of, I don't want to get it. I just want to avoid it, like avoiding it rather than building up the body, building up right. the immune system in order to be strong to fight something like that.
That's exactly right.
But now people are trying to do that.
Yeah. Well, if you really look at what the immune system is, 80% of it is the gut microbiome. And what is the gut microbiome? It is the diversity of bacteria and the food that feeds it. That's what the gut microbiome is, and the structures around, like the mucosal lining and stuff. And when you think about it, I mean, hundreds of thousands of people with Crohn's disease and irritable bowel syndrome and ulcerative colitis in the United States, that defines gut inflammation, which means you've got those three things missing. No good food, no good bacteria, and gut structures are shot and inflamed. So it's a movement back towards taking control of your life through whole food nutrition. And raw milk is the first food of life and probably the queen of the whole food, you know, wonderful choice.
Talk to us about the process of pasteurization and how that came into play in America.
Well, think about it. All through the ages, what would Jesus eat? Land of milk and honey, that was raw, right? Thousands of years, 15,000 years ago, mankind was able to stop fishing, stop hunting, and stop farming, and have a domesticated animal nearby that you're able to capture milk from and eat today. And take that animal with you as long as you had rain and sunshine and grass so you could eat today. And so it served a very, very important domesticated partnership with mankind for the ages, for forever.
Yeah.
Come 1850-ish, you start having people take their cows with them into bigger cities where they no longer had green grass and water that was flowing down the streams. It was clean. And you had the cows being confined and being fed Burr's distiller's grains and other trash. And there was no clean water, no flushing toilets. It was filthy. Typhoid fever, brucellosis, tuberculosis. It was really cold in the morning. You're milking the cow by hand. You put your feet in the milk to keep it warm. That's the kind of milk we're talking about. It's disgusting. And it became something called the milk problem. Well, two pathways began in 1893. Dr. Henry Coit said, let's clean up the milk. Let's certify the milk to have it continue to flow to the Mayo Clinic to heal people, but it has to come from farms with green pastures, and it has to come from farms with clean water, and we're going to test to make sure that milk is clean. And
wait, they were using raw milk in the Mayo Clinic to treat people?
Yes.
For what exactly?
All kinds of things. You name it, they were treating it. They had a whole milk diet there, and that went through the 1920s and 30s. They were using raw milk from the certified, the AAMMC, with Dr. Henry Coit, the American Association of Medical Milk Commissions, for years at the Mayo Clinic. There's books written about it.
Wow.
At that same year, in 1893, Mr. Strauss brought in the parboiler. Well, this came from France. It was used to make wines and beers and alcohols and stuff to kill bacteria so that the yeast would grow. And it was part of the fermentation process for alcohol. It was never used for milk in France. He brought this system in and poured all this filthy milk that they were getting from these downtown distillery dairies into this parboiler. He cooked the living heck out of it. And what do you know? Overnight, 40% of the people less died. Still had problems because water quality was so terrible.
Okay.
So it's like, oh my gosh, a fantastic revolution where you have cheap milk in downtown to feed people and you just cook the heck out of it.
So they just figured out a way to sanitize the milk.
Yeah.
But it
killed off
a lot of the good stuff.
All of the good stuff.
All of it.
Dr. Bruce German, bless his heart, he's the founder of the International Milk Genomics Consortium, said, pasteurization is an 18th century solution to an 18th century problem. We can do a hell of a lot better. And that's exactly what we're doing. And so if the farmers have good standards, are trained in those standards, feed their cows well, do testing, you have a completely different kind of product.
Yeah.
But if you don't care because all you're doing is chasing the weight of the milk and it's going to go off to be pasteurized, and all your neighbors dump the milk in the same truck, and who cares what goes there, and the bacteria standards are through the roof, including pathogenic bacteria in that milk, because it's all going to get cooked with a 5-log kill, you have two different kinds of milk, raw milk for people and raw milk for the pasteurizer. And we do raw milk for people. Entirely different proposition than raw milk for pasteurization.
So what are the health implications of pasteurization? How does that change the final product and what it does in the body of the person who's drinking it?
We all have Google. Look up the most allergenic food in America, pasteurized milk. When you kill all of the bioactives, you inactivate all of the extracellular vesicles that are there. They're so important to the vital nature of this first food of life. When you've destroyed the fat cell, which is now be considered an immune cell by some scientists, because it's all the traits of being an immune cell, which is phenomenal, right? When you destroy all of that through pasteurization, homogenization, supplementation, back to fugation, and every other Asian you can make up, you have a very allergenic food that does not have bioactives that help you with your health. What you've got is basically cereal lubricant. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's fat, yeah, there's protein, but the bioactives that help you, like the lipids, there's no lipase to help digest the lipids, the fats. The proteases are missing, the peptidases are missing to help digest the proteins.
The lactose is missing.
The lactose is missing the lactase. There's no lactase in milk though.
Okay.
But the bacteria that makes lactase is in milk.
Okay.
So remember, lactose is the milk sugar. It is a fantastic prebiotic. Prebiotics are food that feeds probiotics. So if we ingest lactose, if we also have the accompanying probiotic bacteria like lactobacillus bacteria, bifidobacteria, other coliform bacteria that digest it and make lactase for you, you don't have lactose intolerance.
And that's what people take as a supplement who are lactose intolerant when they choose to consume dairy. But it's all there already in the raw form.
In our community, we call it pasteurization intolerance.
Yeah.
The Maasai, black as coal from Kenya. They win all the Olympic stuff because they're such good athletes. They drink raw milk from cows.
Yeah.
They have no problem with lactose intolerance. They don't have the lactase persistence gene either. Those black people come to America, they have a hell of a problem with the fact that we have pasteurized milk. I know a guy, a Maasai warrior, his name is Kameli. I gave him 8 gallons of milk a week and he got rid of Crohn's disease 8 years ago. But he lived in Kenya. Go to the Mongolians in Outer Manchuria. They're all Asian, Chinese people. They drink mare's milk, raw mare's milk. They're athletes, they're warriors. No problem at all with lactose intolerance. They do not have the lactase persistence gene.
Interesting. I've never thought about that with ancestral cultures.
Correct.
That rely on milk as a huge part of their diet. Like, lactose intolerance is not a thing.
No.
In those cultures.
It's a current world problem with highly processed milk.
Yeah. Okay, and then something I actually don't really have a good understanding on is homogenization. Can you talk about what that process entails?
The fat globule is a three-layer lipid structure that's considered to be literally an immune cell because it has microRNA. It's got all kinds of things in it. It's got bacteria. It's got enzymes. It's got alkaline phosphatase. It's got the butyrates that make butyric acid for your lower gut. It has dietary fiber in a fat cell. My God, right? It's incredible how they send that through a screen at extremely high pressure, thousands of pounds of pressure per square inch. It's called a homogenizer that destroys that butterfat and makes it into shreds.
Wow.
So homogenization is a choice, it's not a requirement, to destroy the best part of milk.
Why would anyone choose to do that?
Because the fat doesn't rise to the top anymore.
Oh, so it's just a...
Back in the 1920s, check this out, Bethany. This is like, oh my God, pinch me. Back in the 20s, remember that they would deliver raw milk to your doorstep and pasteurized milk to your doorstep. And people would always say, I don't want that one. It doesn't have enough cream on the top. Mm. They'd buy the milk by the cream layer.
Yeah.
Because that was the good stuff. It was the delicious, wonderful, life-bringing, wonderful thing.
It makes it taste so good.
So the marketing people said, don't worry about the cream. It's all mixed together. It doesn't float to the top anymore because we homogenize it. And by the way, they were able to buy a longer shelf life as a result too, because the fat wouldn't ferment as fast. So it was a marketing choice to extend shelf life and not have competition in the marketplace. And the other thing is, you could mix in other things and homogenize too, like dried powdered milk, other things to make it have better mouthfeel. And you could keep the butter fat to make butter and make money.
Okay.
So you'd hide the cream and do something else and say, oh, it's homogenized. And you could take the butter fat, which made money. So all about the money. The more you look at this, it's not conspiracy, it's all about the money. The conspiracy comes from them trying to protect themselves to keep the money because people don't want the product anymore and all the shenanigans they do to try to protect themselves from losing market share.
So now, as we were talking about earlier, the FDA, you're their favorite person.
I am. I feel so honored.
So
I really am.
What is the motivation behind that? Is it just to protect the dairy industry as
yes.
a whole and these processes that they've come to rely on so heavily?
Remember, under the FDA's mind, the only raw milk that they know or that they acknowledge is filthy. It has to be pasteurized. I actually agree with that. I have no contention with that.
The conventional milk
yes.
should be pasteurized.
Because of the way they've set their standards up and eight generations of dairymen have been trained, that milk's dirty, it's gotta go to the pasteurizer. The pasteurizer people love it because it's cheap milk and they can make a brand out of it and do their thing. That's the only FDA acknowledged milk that they have. They will not sit with me. They will not meet with me. I begged for 15, 20 years to sit down with to talk to them. They do not want to acknowledge their own PubMed literature that's archived at NIH or CDC. They do not want to talk about clean milk that's tested. They don't want to talk about that because if they do, that means they have to acknowledge that theirs is filthy and it's dead and the most allergenic food in America and mine's not. And they'd have to acknowledge the European studies that show the same thing to be true. So the FDA is literally burying their heads in the sand to not acknowledge something that's true in science, which is another kind of raw milk, which is clean raw milk.
Why is the FDA so beholden to these dairy companies that are producing pasteurized milk?
If you look at the FDA, the people that work there came from those dairies. Those processing plants. And so they're sharing back and forth between the FDA and industry, and they get golden parachutes back and forth conveniently to protect themselves. I've been at their conferences. I was asked, said, if you want to change things, go to the NCIMS conference. I went there in 2007. I went there, went to Florida. I presented to their science committee and I tried to go up to an FDA person and talk to them. They ran away from me.
Like literally they ran. Oh my gosh.
As fast as possible. And went to the hotel room and closed the door.
Wow. Wow.
And I didn't run after him. I was like, okay, I'm not going to run. That's ridiculous. I went and tried to find another one, and they turned their back to me. So it is an absolute essential part of their paycheck. And when it's a part of your paycheck not to do that, you're not going to do it. Mm-hmm. And so I don't blame them. That's their reality. That's the way it is. What we're going to do instead is build a market, and we'll wake up one morning and we will have won. And that's what's happening right now.
Mm-hmm. And you've talked to me a little bit already about the different processes that you've put in place to ensure that your milk is super clean, super sanitary. Can you talk a little bit about some of those things that you do?
Milk that comes out of a healthy cow with an udder that's prepared nicely is very clean and very safe. There's not pathogens out of the cow. The milk is super clean. Coliforms of one. Do you know how many coliforms are allowed in the milk that goes off to be pasteurized before it gets commingled with other dairies?
Can you explain what a coliform is?
Coliform is a sanitary bacteria. It's a bacteria indicating how clean things are.
Okay.
750. Wow, that's a whole different world. Mm-hmm. And uncounted when you combine it with other dairies that go off to be pasteurized. So we're talking about really clean milk that still has a biodiversity of beneficial bacteria, but it's clean and it's delicious and it lasts 21 days. We do milk differently. I have a t-shirt that says we do milk different, but
I was going to say, that's a good phrase. It's a good...
We do dairy different.
Yeah.
My daughter gets credit for that one, Kaylee.
But good.
Super clean cows, pastures, sunshine, clean water, super clean udders, super clean equipment that goes on the udder that takes that milk instantly to a chiller that within 2 minutes, it goes from 99 degrees, body temperature of the cow, down to 35 degrees and holds it there. Puts it into a silo tank where we take a sample of that milk and test it for pathogens in our own on-farm lab, Thermo Fisher lab, and we get the data back in 19 to 20 hours. We have two microbiologists that work for us to make sure that that data is there. Before we put it in the bottle, we know what's in the milk.
And this is not
That's
standard.
Not what the FDA talks like, about.
Right, right. And you were saying that I think you're the only farm that does it this way, the only raw farm or dairy farm in general that has...
We have a community of farms under the Raw Milk Institute, which is a nonprofit that I help established many years ago. And many of those farms have on-farm labs as well, but they're not pathogen labs, they're sanitation labs. They test to make sure that their coliforms are really low, which is indicating that things are clean. Great. That's the standard we promote. We went one step beyond because in California, it's a litigious state. And I make somebody sick, we're gonna have a lawyer wanting $1 million. So we absolutely wanted to go to that extra level.
Of and testing for the pathogens.
Pathogens,
on
yeah.
On top of that.
Yeah.
So even with all of these processes in place then, like why is there still so much opposition to what you're doing?
We're losing 5.5 dairies a day in America.
Conventional dairies.
Conventional dairies. Because they're oversupplying milk for the available demand. So the big dairies are hoping the little dairies go out of business so they can be the biggest dairy and be king of the mountain. And that works only a little bit of the time because most of the time they get consumed by the bigger guy that wants to eat them. And that's been going on for 60 years. We used to have a bunch of 20 cow dairies, and then there were 80 cow dairies, and there were 200 cow dairies. Now there's 1,700 cow dairies, becoming 20,000 cow dairies. They're building a 100,000 cow dairy in Kansas. Shocking, right? So we aren't losing cows, we're losing farmers. They're just fewer dairies with bigger, but that's not the local food system that does raw milk for people. So we are very supportive of training farmers all over the world. We trained 155 farmers in Great Britain 5 years ago. We train farmers of Canada, where it's illegal. We don't care if it's legal or not. We just want to make it safe. We train farmers all over the United States, Australia, New Zealand, everywhere. We're helping a project in Scotland right now, which is really cool. So we believe that you do three things, and the NIH studies show this. You use super high standards. You train the farmers in those standards, and they have a plan around how they're going to execute those standards. And then you test, and you have a different milk. That milk is very safe. That milk is delicious, and it lasts 20 to 25 days. And it doesn't have the allergen. It's not the allergy. It's fantastic for it. The raw whey protein stabilizes mast cells and keeps histamines in check. And all these wonderful butterfat globules are there, and they act like immune cells, which are fantastic for your immune system. People love it, and they're buying it wherever they can get it. And whether it's legal or illegal, people are going to get their milk. We want it to be safe, so everybody can enjoy it. The farmers will thrive, consumers will thrive, and we'll have a better country, a better world as a result.
Well, growing 1% per week is pretty wild. I mean, I think that alone just speaks to the massive demand for raw milk right now and the benefits that a lot of people are experiencing from it. Talk to us about some of the skin benefits of raw milk, because we're a skincare company. We get a lot of questions about eczema. And I think the common line of thinking is to avoid dairy for eczema, which I would agree with in terms of conventional dairy. But talk to me about why raw milk is different in that sense.
Let's talk about the body as a whole.
Let's do it.
Your skin is your largest organ in your body. I was a paramedic. I taught paramedic medicine for 17 years, 15,000 paramedic calls, pre-med trained. So I know enough about medicine to get myself in a lot of trouble. Let's put it that way, okay? But your body is covered with this organ, this skin, the epithelial skin of your body. Well, when your gut microbiome is doing well, and you have these wonderful fats and other whole foods and all these things, the things found in raw milk, these immune system regulating components, you start having a balanced microbiome. Your skin is part of that microbiome. And you don't have the inflammation going on. You're not being driven by allergies or the whole histamine response. One thing that we know from acne is it really is associated with a dysbiotic environment, with bacteria gone crazy. And so one of the things we find is a common thread through people that consume raw milk and raw milk kefir is that their skin clears up and really nice because their microbiome is functioning properly. And when you think about the microbiome, don't think about it. It's just something in your lower intestine. It's permeating through your entire being. There's not a lot of bacteria in your brain, but I mean, most of the rest of your body shares bacteria all over the place.
Yeah, especially the surface of your skin.
Certainly.
Tons of bacteria.
Absolutely. And so you don't separate the systems of your body into subparts. You think of the whole microbiome. Dr. Bonnie Basler, a brilliant MIT scientist, many years ago had a TED talk about how bacteria talk. And that 15 minutes TED talk changed my life. Because it talks about 23,000 genes from mom and dad. Yep, 23andMe. Yep, got that from dad. And that's the hardware that makes us look the way we are. But there's uncounted millions of genes that come from the bacteria in you and on you that actually regulate how you operate. That's the software. So it's like a cell phone without any apps or soft. It doesn't work. So you need to have that bandwidth of genetic information at the cellular level. And she explains that on this TED Talk. And the whole Human Genome Project was based on that. What makes us human? We're literally bacteriosapiens. When you think about this mountain of bacteria that in it on us at all the times, that we need to make sure there are friendly bacteria, not unfriendly bacteria. The way you do that is feed them properly because the good food attracts good bacteria. So if you eat a lot of sugar, expect the yeast to come. You're gonna have problems. If you have preservatives and antibiotics and all those kinds of things, you're gonna have you're not gonna have a diversity of beneficial bacteria. You're gonna have some pathogenic bacteria and some problems with your skin from infection. So lower infection, lower inflammation, less chronic diseases, all those things come from the gut. Hippocrates said 2,350 years ago, Hippocrates, ancient Greek doctor, all disease begins in the gut. Let food be your medicine, medicine be your food, and do no harm. So it all begins in the gut.
He had it right.
He had it right a long time ago.
Yeah. And then we've kind of lost our way, but
a little bit.
I think things are kind of coming full circle now.
They have to.
Yeah.
We can't continue on the path we're on.
No, we can't. And we say the same thing as a skincare company. Like, we obviously want everyone to use our products, but we also talk about how you can't separate your skin health from the health of your body as a whole.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
So education has always been a big core component of the brand. And that's why we're doing this podcast and having people like
with
you.
With that, I need a swig of milk.
Yeah, we've got raw farm milk here.
That is so Cheers. Important, what you just said. Don't separate your skin from the rest of your body.
I feel like we would be doing people such a disservice as a skincare company to only sell product and not pair that with education on how to be healthy in general.
Correct.
Because that's going to reflect on the health of your skin.
And you know, I'm not a big diet fad guy. I just say whole food nutrition. Mm-hmm. Whole food. Whatever you're eating, make sure it's whole.
Yeah.
Don't forget the good fats.
Yeah.
Because they're so anti-inflammatory and so powerful. And they're like little... They carry packages of information to various parts of our body that need it. This package includes genetic coding and what to do. Raw milk does three things. Nourishes completely, protects, and directs. Three things. All the things that a newborn baby would want, you get as an adult because you're smart enough to be able to domesticate an animal, whether it was a cow, a goat, a sheep, a horse, a camel, a reindeer. I mean, that's the diversity of animals we've had domesticated for the last 15,000 years.
I had like a light bulb moment earlier when you were talking about how, you know, raw milk is the first food and it's what builds the bacteria in your gut. And then I was thinking like after taking antibiotics, if you ever have to take antibiotics for whatever reason, like people will say like eat the rainbow and these different things to rebuild the bacteria in the gut. But I feel like probably the best thing you could do would be to drink
kefir.
Raw milk
or raw milk, kefir, I would say.
Okay.
It is raw milk, but it's been fermented and it's had 12 additional bacteria added, which are very intentional. But you got the biodiversity of the milk, and then you add in 12 more, and it's been fermented to 10 to 15 million per milliliter. So biodiversity and massive amounts, make a smoothie out of that with all the rainbow you're talking about.
Yeah.
Make yourself a rainbow smoothie, but this is the base. It makes everything more bioavailable too, because all those wonderful functional enzymes are there.
Okay, and you brought some. I feel like we should try it right now. I've never tried kefir. This will be my first time.
Oh my word.
I know.
Oh my word, here we go. First time ever.
So we have the regular one and a new lemon essence.
The plain, and that's just the plain. This is lemon essence, which is basically just lemon essence. It's a organic lemon flavoring without sugar. And so there's no preservatives. If you look at the ingredients, it's pretty short. cultured whole raw milk and lemon extract, done.
Easy.
Not going on for three paragraphs of all the stuff your body doesn't understand, right? It's kind of thickened raw milk because it's kind of on its way to become yogurt, kind of.
Okay.
So this is lemon.
It's lemon.
Oh.
That's good. I could do that.
Yeah.
I could do that every
day. It's good stuff.
Yeah. Mmm. I love the lemon. It's almost
it's
like a dessert.
It's one of my favorite. It's delicious.
Like I could have this after dinner and feel like I just had a treat. So you touched on your background as a paramedic. I feel like you've done a lot of different things in life. You're a pilot. You flew here for this interview. Like so many, you have such a cool background.
I am living my absolute passion in my life. Everything I've wanted to do, everything I'm doing is with purpose, and I feel really good about it. And
how did you get into the raw dairy business?
How did it begin? Mm-hmm. Cute story about that. My grandparents passed away in 1996 and gave my brothers and I basically 1,000 acres of ground, agricultural ground. And my brothers were doing well and doing things in Cupertino and working with Steve Jobs at Apple Computer and my brother and doing all kinds of stuff. I said, nope, you do it. We aren't going to do it. And I was kind of done with dead bodies in 24-hour shifts. I was done with that whole thing. I was like, I want to get some sleep.
You did that for what, 17?
16 years. Yeah.
Okay.
1980 to 1996. So took back the farm, but I was very intentional that I wanted to serve people, not the commodity markets. Because I saw my neighbors going through this roller coaster of up and down prices, and as soon as something was good, everybody would plant it and kill it, and it was just bad. So I wanted to differentiate. And so we, through a long story made short, we actually got a call. I started a dairy, organic dairy, and we're serving Organic Valley, but I was going to Los Angeles a lot. And we got a call from a guy named James Stewart, and he operated a little place called The Garage. This is in the back streets of Venice. He said, Mark, Altadena just went out of business. We need your raw milk. There's no raw milk down here. Everybody's screaming bloody murder for it. I said, what do you mean raw milk? And they explained it to me. And I said, I'm on it. So I got a bunch of half gallons of milk, half gallons of plastic containers, no label or anything, bottled it up out of our bowl cake, put it on ice, put it in an ice chest. And my wife and I drove to LA and drove into this alley. And this is where my raw milk world began. Drove into this alley. And in this alley, there were movie stars. There are moms, dads, every walk of life you can imagine, cheering.
Wow.
Saying, oh my God, thank you for coming. And we couldn't even open our Suburban doors. They opened the back, started taking milk out, started throwing $10 and $20 bills in the car. And I'm going, what's going on here, right? They open the doors, get out, and they're just cheering, saying, come back tomorrow. You're out of raw milk. We ran out of raw milk. We need more. And this gal comes up to my wife, who's a labor and delivery nurse. And she said, they're out of raw milk. And my daughter has a condition, I'm sure what it was. She has to have raw milk. She's been having all kinds of problems since Altadena left the market a few months ago. My wife went to this gal who had taken 10 gallons. She gave her back some of her money, took three or four and gave to this woman for free, and a long tearful conversation with this mom who had this child that needed this milk badly. So they appealed to my economics. They appealed to my humanity. They appealed to my medical background and deeply into my wife's emotion of this woman needing it for a child.
How long ago did that?
That was 1999.
Okay.
25 years ago.
And that's when it all began.
That's when it began. I drove home 70 miles an hour. I said, we got to build a creamery now. And we did. We got a big old 50-foot reefer van that had a cold chiller on one end. We tilted it up a little bit so water flew out the back, put a wall in the middle, bottled on one end, and we shipped out of the other end. And we built a $1 million market the first year with James Stewart. That's how we started. When we called Whole Foods, I didn't, James called because he was our distributor at that time. He goes, how fast can you drive that product down here? that was their invitation for us in 2001.
Because they knew.
They knew there was a demand. They wanted it. Whole Foods changed their whole tune in 2010 when they kicked me out. Two kids got sick in Connecticut. Had nothing to do with us. And they had to write a check.
Your milk wasn't even in Connecticut.
No. Yeah. This is somebody else doing local raw milk in Connecticut. Bless their heart. They had 12 cow dairy selling milk. They didn't know what they're doing. They got two kids sick. Kids lived. They were fine. But the checks for writing the check for liability came out of Austin, Texas. And Austin, Texas did not have any raw milk there. And they didn't care about California. So it was like, you're out of here. So that's where Sprouts and Jimbo's and all these Mother's Markets, and they picked us up. And we grew like crazy since then.
Are you back in Whole Foods now?
No, we want to be. We'd love to be.
But so they're still not letting you guys back in?
Unfortunately not. The marketing data shows us going like this. Mm-hmm. Sprouts stock is at $120 a share right now. Last year it was 35 at this time of the year.
Wow.
Whole Foods was 35, now at 50, 60. So they doubled. They did pretty well. But Sprouts went triple, quadruple. And they carry our products nationally and in California. I'm not claiming it's all us, but we're part of that story. Mm-hmm. I call it my stock price.
Raw milk is legal in California, yes. And only 12.
It's legal in California, states. Arizona, Washington State, Pennsylvania, Idaho, Connecticut, Maine. Those are where you can buy raw milk in a store. Okay. Now there's a bunch of like 25 states where you can actually buy milk on the farm as part of a herd share or some other negotiated deal. And there's only a handful of states that have made raw milk illegal, like Hawaii, and they're about to change. I'm very proud to say that Delaware just a few weeks ago changed their law to allow raw milk. It was illegal before, and it was one of our farmers that we trained in Delaware, Stephanie, who actually approached her Congress and actually got complete support, including their Secretary of Agriculture, because we defined what raw milk was that we wanted to produce. It wasn't raw milk for pasteurization, it was raw milk for people. And all those farms in Delaware are going to have an on-farm lab now.
Wow.
They went from 43 dairies 2 years ago down to 13 dairies because of the loss of dairies. And now they're going to grow back because they're going to be doing raw milk for their local communities.
The loss of dairies. Okay, we touched on this earlier, but is this happening because of all of these plant-based milk alternatives and the rise of that? Or are conventional dairies losing business because raw milk is on the rise? Or is it a combination of both?
I would say if pasteurized milk was so great, they would have kept their customers.
Yeah.
When you're highly allergenic, doesn't taste very good, and you got lactose intolerance, or pasteurization intolerance as we call it, you actually destroy your own market. And so the milk alternatives came up. Some of them done better than others, but they're kind of flattened off and some have died off. It's kind of done its thing. But people are searching for the real deal. The one that's been around for 15,000 years. It's not a fad. Mm-hmm. It's not an alternative. It's the real thing.
Why is it still illegal in so many states?
Money. If you go to the hearing where they're talking about legalization of raw milk, who shows up tells you the story. The FDA shows up, says, no way, no way, no way. Or they have their local veterinarian go do it for them. And the pasteurizer, the processors will show up and they'll say, oh, they're going to kill people. They're going to do this. They're going to do that. And we have the mothers show up with the farmers that want to do raw milk. And they tell their side of the story and say, we agree. That kind of raw milk you're producing needs to be pasteurized. We're talking about a kind of raw milk you can't produce that we can produce on a farm meticulously that results in very safe, low-risk raw milk. And that's not a raw milk we're talking about that you're talking about. We're talking about a different kind of raw milk. And people go, what do you mean? Well, it's about standards. This kind of standards over here, this kind of bacteria counts and all that kind of stuff, and this kind of treatment of the milk, that's your standard. Or this kind of raw milk. One farmer, high standards, testing, very clean, connected to consumers, an entirely different proposition. And that works really, really well.
I feel like pasteurization as a process, it really allows the farmer to cut a lot of corners in how they treat the cows, how the cows are raised, in just all of their processes. They're able to turn a blind eye to doing things in the best way possible because they're kind of just relying on pasteurization as the safety blanket.
That's totally true, Bethany. And it even goes deeper than that because the farmer has no connection to the consumer.
Yeah.
Their connection is to the processor. They have nothing to show anybody from the public. And they consider the public kind of the PETA freaks, the people that are going to cause a problem, they're going to fly drones over the farm, tell bad stories about them, and no trespassing, kind of stay away from me. A lot of farmers feel that way. Not all farmers. Some farmers really want to do better and they work really hard. But many are very, very adverse to people because they're so private. It's like, no, I sell to the processor. Processors deal with people. They don't want to deal with people.
Yeah, it's like fragmented.
I love people come to our farm because I want to teach. I want to hear their story. I want to hear why they're drinking raw milk, how they found out about us. I want to embrace myself with people. And these dairymen are not, they don't have any money because they're on the edge financially because they're being paid so little. So they have nothing really to show off on their farm most of the time. It's kind of a mess. And they're just trying to scrape together any kind of milk they can to put in that tank to send it off.
Yeah.
It's a different world.
Why is raw milk so villainized when other raw foods, like spinach, is equally able or even more so to cause, like, sickness?
If you look at the dynamics of somebody who's selling vegetables at a farmer's market, the vegetables are being sold directly to people. You don't pasteurize vegetables. You sell them directly to people. And the person comes back the next week and gets more. You have a relationship. Pasteurized milk sold to a processor. You don't talk to people ever, pasteurized milk. So it's a commercialized system where the processors do not want me talking to people because if I go to people, it bypasses the processor. So it's all about the money. It's all about the fact that they have built a battleship, 100 years of building this big thing that all it does is cook milk. And my product can't go through that process. So they are like, oh, what do we do? What do we do? Oh, we're scrambling. What are we going to do? Oh my God. It displaces the big processed industry consolidation, and they're extremely threatened by that.
Yeah.
That's why it's villainized. Exactly why it's villainized. Because
at the expense of a lot of people's health, right?
At the expense of all the bioactives that should be going to human beings to make them better.
Yeah.
100%.
What are some of the craziest transformations or stories that you've seen from customers or family members that have experienced
I'll tell you one of my favorites. Goes with all the things I like to do in my life. The gal's name is Susan Johnson. She runs the
Susan's
whole...
Susan's one of my good friends.
I love Susan. Yeah, she's my sister. Amazing. Is she great? Susan's one of my heroes, by the way.
Yeah, she's the best.
Kicker in the whole story. She was working in a pediatrician's office up in Mammoth many years ago. And she needed some raw milk. And she didn't have any up there. She had a kid with head-to-toe eczema, skin eruption, just a mess. Only 2 or 3 years old. Real young kid. And she knew raw milk was going to help the child. So she called me up, and I flew my airplane up there with raw milk. It's a 25-minute flight.
That's
it's
amazing.
Like 8-hour drive. So I flew it up there. I gave it to her, and we started a little raw milk market up there. And she started giving this child free. I gave the child free. She started taking pictures of this child. Within about a month, the child was completely free of all the skin problems.
Wow.
I love that. And that was
amazing.
That was a compassionate, knowledge-based, scientific move. Pediatrician's office to just show... What we can do here. There are things found in raw milk that are, they direct the cell function of what we're supposed to do. They align things. The genetic coding, the information, the DNA, the RNA, ribonucleic acid, actually directs cell function. It tells the body what to do when it's confused. And so when there are things going wrong, many of those things can be corrected. I'm not going to claim everything, but I'm telling you, a lot of things go straight when they need to. Because of how scrambled things are.
We've implemented a new policy in our household where we have kind of eliminated like snacking between meals for my husband and I and for our kids. We're just kind of trying to like move away from that.
Yeah.
But we say, if you're hungry between meals, you can have raw milk. And so it's kind of like essentially like an unlimited raw milk policy in our household. And we're just kind of relying on our intuition and our kids' intuition of like, how much they need. But we've noticed that in the last several months, like we're around other kids all the time, other kids with sicknesses, like my kids are exposed to a lot of different things. And like, they've been so healthy, especially like since we've been doing this, we've been dealing with a few sicknesses already at this point. Hasn't happened this year.
Well, the studies coming out of Europe, the Parsifal study, the Gabriella study, and other follow-on studies, they're all at the NIH website. Talk about 55,000 kids across Europe studied over a period of several years, this is like 15 years ago, and how they had lesser rates of fever, flu is virus, ear infections, nasal drainage, cough, those kinds of things, dramatically lower, and asthma was dramatically lower. So the raw whey protein is a very big part of this, and I'm gonna say the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the things. There was a study done by the National Dairy Council, 2021, published by Cornell University, NIH, about all of the bioactives they want to take out of unprocessed milk to make medical claims on to patent.
Wow. Wow.
I saw that. Home run.
Yeah.
Ring the win, because they're acknowledging that, in fact, there is a difference between pasteurized and raw. And the FDA says there's no difference. That's a lie.
Yeah.
Straight up bold-faced lie. The processors themselves recognize post-COVID that people are looking for adaptive, resilient immune systems. These bioactives give them that.
Well, you are really selling me on raw. I mean, I know you're not trying to sell me. You're educating me.
No, I'm educated.
But I've already been.
We do not sell raw milk. We teach it.
You teach it. But I feel like I've been passionate about raw milk, you know, for the last couple of years. And now I'm even more excited about it. And I'm excited to even, like, I'm excited for our customers to hear this episode in our community, because we do have so many people in our community that ask about different things. Like, I mean, eczema is a big one for kids. And I'm excited for people to hear this information. And I'm excited to implement it into some of, like, our recommendations, because in the past, even as a raw milk fan, our recommendation has been to kind of, like, avoid dairy if you or your child is struggling with eczema. And now my perspective is really shifting on that, and because everything that you're saying makes so much sense.
Pasteurized dairy and raw dairy are
two totally
worlds apart.
Yeah.
Don't even think about them in the same world. And you add in your pasture bird, you add in good poultry, you get a good meat, pastured meat, you add in eggs, you add in the vegetables, you add in fermented stuff, sauerkraut, a cornucopia of life, these whole food and raw milk together. That's what we're supposed to be eating. Mm. Unprocessed whole natural foods. And if we do, when we do, those that do, will transform their lives. They'll change their lives. And it'll be a multi-generational thing if they get the kids going. Fertility, think about the fertility. Infertility is going crazy.
Huge epidemic.
The tentacles go deep. Mm-hmm. We need to start changing immediately. We should have changed many years ago, but let's do it now. It will help the farmers. It will help the consumers. Our world will be better.
That leads into my next question. Where do you see the future of raw milk headed in America?
Dollar voting is showing us right now. Consumers would rather pay $18 a gallon for this product. And I apologize for the price. It's too high.
But you're doing a lot. There's so many processes behind the scenes.
You've talked about. We don't get the $18. Let me tell you, we get a lot less than that. Mm-hmm. The stores get a big piece of that. But my point is, they're choosing that milk at $18 a gallon versus something far cheaper for a reason. People do not spend money twice. They may once, but they don't spend money twice unless it's serving a purpose in their life. So I think that's really showing the true direction of where we're going, where food is medicine, true medicine, preventative medicine. And it's scary living and hearing, oh, that person just came down with cancer. Mm-hmm. Oh, that person's gonna have an ileostomy. Oh, that person just broke her bones. That person's got a bunch of problems with their teeth. All around us, it's like you're walking in a minefield. When are you going to step on the mic? Mm-hmm. It's a wake-up call for all of us to think prevention through nutrition, it really matters. And it's personal. It's your choice. And sometimes that's hard to do. Addictive foods are hard to break those addictions. Sometimes it's a cost thing. But I think the most valuable thing we have in our life is nutrition and love.
I honestly think, like, as you were talking about the food, like, addictions that we can have to food, that's absolutely true. And I have found that, like, if I'm craving a dessert or something, like something sweet, I used to have a major sweet tooth. I feel like it's dissipated a lot in the recent years. But if I do have those cravings, like, I will now just pour myself a cup of raw milk, and it nourishes me and satiates me.
Yeah. The fat actually makes you feel full.
And I feel good. I don't feel gross afterwards. Well, so I feel like that's a great way.
Serotonin, dopamine, that's made in your gut. Mm-hmm. That travels to your brain. It makes you feel good. It makes you behave better. Mm-hmm. The gut-brain axis is way underrated, way underappreciated. I mean, this reaches into the crime levels and all kinds of stuff. And people that are in prisons, what did they grow up on? What the food that they had? Yeah. What opportunity did they have? I think every prison should have a raw milk dairy. I really do. Not only for the contact with the animal, but the raw milk that it gives them. I mean, there's so much
that'd
we could
huge.
Do. Yeah, it'd be huge.
Yeah.
It'd be wonderful. Anyway, I think this is great steps in the right direction for better humanity.
Yeah. I have a few kind of random questions to close us out.
Okay. Love those.
Well, first, I haven't asked you about colostrum yet. Talk to us about colostrum, because I have always thought of colostrum as the first milk. I've thought of it as a type of milk, but maybe more nutrient dense. But that's not quite the case, right?
No. Colostrum is not milk. It does not come from the lacteal gland. Lacteal glands lactate. They create milk, which is a lactation. Colostrum comes from another source inside the udder, which is actually a serum component. It's blood system stuff. It's the immunoglobulins, antibodies, and all those things that come from the blood system. And that only makes sense because you would want those to go into the leaky gut of a baby immediately to go into its blood system as the first nursing in life. So that's why mammals have a colostrum that's given to the baby before the milk comes in, which is a day or two after the colostrum has been sucked out or suckled out.
Just to like prepare the gut.
It prepares the gut. It gives the antibodies into the bloodstream to give that baby a boost of what the mother's life experiences it from her blood system into the baby's blood system. And remember, babies and moms don't share the same blood system because of the umbilical cord. The placental barrier doesn't allow the baby can have a different blood system than mom.
Different blood type, potentially.
Right. So these are the way to cross that placental barrier after birth, which is suckling from the breast. So colostrum is high in HGH, a human growth hormone. It's high in fat. It's high in all kinds of interesting immunoglobulins, antibodies. So it's not really milk. It's more of immune transfer. Remember this, it's a kind of a warning, but if you have cancer, the HGH could stimulate the growth of that cancer with colostrum.
Wow.
So be cautious. It could also cure, but at the same time, it could actually stimulate the growth because it's got those hormones that drive growth.
Mm.
And it's got human growth hormone, which is obviously very good for weightlifting and things like that. Mm-hmm. So there's a mixed bag there.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very health supporting, but just be aware.
Yeah, that's good to know.
There's some things there. Raw milk comes on as the colostrum is dissipated, the lacteal letdown, the follicle stimulating hormone and all that stuff, prolactin starts to make the milk come in, and then you start producing milk, and the mother then gorges with milk, and the baby then gets milk that actually supports the growth of all the bacteria that was in the colostrum. And actually then starts to colonize the gut, and you start off your first steps of the immune system in the baby.
It's amazing.
Fascinating.
How it all works together.
It all works together.
Yeah.
Mother Nature's got it going on.
Yeah.
Blueprints of life.
Talk to me about the raw cheese loophole. I'm going to do air quotes, raw cheese loophole.
In the United States, the word raw is not defined. Pasteurization is defined as 149 degrees for 30 minutes. That's vat pasteurization. And then there's protocols for shorter time but higher temperatures all the way up to 282 degrees. So that's all the cookedest stuff. But if you've got 148 degrees, that's raw, but it's not. So if you think about a big processing plant that wants to make money on raw cheeses, they got all this garbage milk that comes in, high bacteria counts, pathogens, all kinds of stuff. The cultures that you would add into the cheese to make it become cheddar or whatever it's gonna be won't work very, very well because the background bacteria levels are so high. So why not cook it a little bit, but not quite pasteurized? Or if we don't have a pasteurizer license, take it as high as you want because nobody's going to care because we don't pasteurize because we don't have a license to pasteurize because it's a licensed thing. So you're going to cook it a little bit. And then because it's not truly pasteurized because you don't have a pasteurizer's license, then when you cool it back down, your cultures will work because the background flora has been killed off. Because these cultures you put in don't want competition because the background cultures are kind of directed to do what it's going to do because you're fermenting. So long story short is there are a few producers of truly raw cheese. That's where you take really clean milk and you take it up to about 100 degrees of temperature with body temperature and you add in cultures and you become a truly raw cheese, which preserves all these bioactives we're talking about, all these other proteins and peptidases and enzymes and things that are really important. So we make a truly raw cheese. There are a few other people that do too, but the big guys don't.
Okay, so how would consumers know if the cheese that they're getting is truly raw?
You call the company up and you say, what's your vat temperature? And if they hang up, you know the answer. You just pissed them off.
Yeah.
And that's generally the answer is, it's none of your business and bye.
Yeah.
If they have a vat temperature that's below, let's say 105, 110 degrees, it's truly raw. They're going to brag about it. They're going to say, oh, let me tell you, it's really exciting. But that's kind of hard because when you disconnect the farmer to the consumer, you can't call the farmer.
Mm-hmm.
The consumer, the processors don't represent the farmers, and they've got a 100 line that rarely you get a real person. So it's part of that, like you said, that loophole that, well, we're not going to tell you if you don't ask, and you can't ask us because you can't get a hold of us. So the raw cheeses that are presented by some of these large producers are not truly raw. They've been aged 60 days, that's true, but they've been cooked a little bit, and all your bioactives are gone.
What would you say to someone who thinks that consuming another mammal's milk is strange or unnatural?
That would only happen in a first world country with all kinds of Walmart food. You take away all the Walmart food and all the food around you, put you in the middle of nowhere, naked and afraid, you'd beg for a domesticated animal because you'd starve without it. Interesting thing about that is mankind for the last 15,000 years has made domesticated animals a best friend because you can eat their meat. Cow has a couple calves. You can kill the bull calf and keep the heifer to grow up and be another milk cow. Goats, sheep, horses, all these were edible as well as producing edible milk, which was food for today. So I appreciate their comment, but look at the history and look at the fact that they're neglecting the nutritional bioactive component, which is missing in our gut, as manifesting as a crisis in America with our autoimmune problems and our inflammation in our gut.
Yeah, makes sense. Okay.
There are parents in jail right now for vegan diets in children because of brain damage.
Where is this happening?
In Florida.
Really?
There was a mom and dad put in jail, I think he spent 6 months, because they deprived their children of any kind of animal fat, and the child got brain damage as a result. The first food of life gives us some details about the blueprints of what we're supposed to eat. Breast milk has raw fats in it. That's an animal fat. Mm-hmm. Would you ever think that the child should not have animal fat in their diet if breast milk is the blueprints of life?
Mm-hmm.
That's very telling.
Mm-hmm.
It tells you everything right there,
yeah.
In my opinion.
Makes sense. Okay, we're going to close out with some rapid fire.
This has been awesome. Rapid fire. Here we go.
Mark, if you had to choose between drinking conventional almond milk or conventional pasteurized cow's milk for the rest of your life, which one would you pick?
Oh, boy. Conventional pasteurized milk or almond milk?
With gums and fillers. And
I just came out of the International Milk Genomics Consortium and heard a professor talk, or a PhD talk about when fats are cooked, they aren't good for you and they cause heart disease. So I'm not in love with that concept at all on that side. What I would do is probably the almond milk and cheat and throw it over my shoulder and go find myself a cow and get raw milk.
Okay, you found a loophole. Found a loophole.
I don't know, but I know that cooked fat in the raw milk scenario has not been shown to be beneficial for heart disease.
Yeah.
Raw fats are fantastic and anti-inflammatory and very good for your heart. So I'm not against almond milk, but it just doesn't give you the bioactives. It's just not there.
Yeah. But maybe a more benign option than conventional cow's milk.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. I always think about that because I hate all of the added fillers in the plant-based milks. Like, I wish more coffee shops use raw milk. And that leads to another question. So there is a coffee
shop.
Erewhon, yeah. But I mean, that's like 2 hours for
me. I know.
But they're great. There is a coffee shop about 20 minutes from my house around here that uses raw farm milk. And so sometimes I will make the extra trip over there to get a coffee. But I wonder with raw milk, when it's added to hot coffee or used to make a hot cappuccino or hot latte, does that pasteurize the milk?
If your coffee is so hot that you can't put your finger in it, you're cooking it. But what's interesting is if you have cold cream and you're pouring it in there, it's, let's say, 140 degrees, 135 degree, the first amount you pour in there, it's going to get cooked. You're going to lose your bioactives. But the last part, when it's cooled down to 110 or less, it'll be fine. So you're actually doing some pasteurization, some raw, because you're using that to cool the coffee. So you have a threshold, maybe 115, 120 degrees, where you're going to start losing the really good stuff. So if you can put your finger in it, you're probably okay.
Yeah. And if I'm not putting my finger in it, I'm not drinking it, you know? Like, if it's scalding my finger,
no.
I'm not going to sip on that.
No, you wouldn't want to.
Okay. I can deal with that, because then you're still getting some of the preserved nutrients that are going to help you digest the milk properly. I'll make that concession every once in a while. But best case scenario, I usually get iced coffee and pour it in that.
Well, here's the thing. If you want to have coffee, great. You want to put cream in your coffee? Great. You want to pasteurize the cream? Great. Just make sure you drink raw milk separately or in a smoothie, because that will nourish your microbiome to whatever's coming through you can deal with on the other side.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not going to live sin-free lives here, guys. We live in reality. So you want to have...
It's not about perfection.
No.
Yeah.
It's about trying to hit 85, 90%.
Right.
And when you do, then you're going to start reflecting the tremendous value of that underlying base foundation.
What is your favorite raw farm product?
My favorite raw farm product, lemon raw milk kefir.
That's why you brought it.
I do. It has a special place in my heart. I love it. I love lemons. Lemons are really good for you.
Yeah.
But it's my favorite. Although all of them are wonderful, that's my favorite.
Would you guys ever do a chocolate one? I feel like that would be really good.
Chocolate.
You
know, there's a standard of identity for every product we make. And we can't make raw chocolate milk in California. And the Amish do, because they don't have standard of identity in their state there.
What does that mean?
Standard of identity is a legal description under your state agricultural code, your food and agricultural code, that says, thou shalt not do anything except for this. If you're going to do this product, they call it something. So all of our raw milk things we make actually have a standard of identity for them in California. And raw chocolate milk is not one of them, unfortunately.
Weird.
But you can make your own.
Yeah, exactly. Just add a little cocoa.
You see to do, just shake it up.
Yeah. How can our listeners get involved in the movement to make raw milk legal in their own state or to find a safe raw dairy farmer?
It's happening all over the place. Dr. Joseph Heckman is working on Virginia right now. Be the action. Go to your farmer, get them trained so you have a source of raw milk. The farmer can start thriving and feel the passion of the consumer. The consumers feel the passion because they're changing their lives. Consumers tell other consumers. Then you go find a sponsor at the bill, at your legislature, find a bill sponsor and get them drinking raw milk. Then you have to go seduce your state ag people and other university people and try to get them to go neutral and talk about, we agree pasteurization should go for this kind of milk over here, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about this clean kind of raw milk over here. And it might upset them to say it's clean versus others dirty. So you try to use non-inflammatory language, try to speak their language and try to appeal to their heart and their emotion. And talk about this clean raw milk here that is so important for my children. And you just have to go through the process. And sometimes it takes a while. But I know Delaware's changed the law, Montana's changed the law, Iowa just changed the law, Tennessee's in the middle of it, Virginia's in the middle of it. It's happening. It's a domino effect. It's driven by consumers and farmers working together.
I think a lot of people's concern with raw milk is the risk of contracting foodborne illness. Do you think that that concern is substantiated? And can you talk about the recall that you have?
It was salmonella. It came from one cow in 1,000 cows. And she had one of her quarters had some salmonella. And it was below threshold of detection. So if you tested the milk, it came back negative as for salmonella. So we actually changed our protocol. So we test sets of 20 cows. So we don't have the dilution effect of having so much milk in a tank and not finding the pathogen. And so now we've changed our protocols with our on-farm lab to be able to test 20 cows at a time and actually see that, in fact, none of those cows have a pathogen coming from them. We learn from it. And that's the pioneering spirit, I think, of taking something and not taking it as, taking it as an inspiration to do better instead of falling down and giving up. I have a take on food safety, by the way. It's kind of an interesting way of looking at this. Is it better for your entire culture of people to live in a bubble of trouble and be sterilized and not live in nature because you can't be exposed to normal bacteria because you're gonna get sick? That's kind of where we're heading right now, which is everything has to be super sterilized and clean, 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 and dead, 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 because we are weaker and weaker and weaker. Is that the course for better? Or should we be exposed to a biodiversity of bacteria and build immunity, build a strong, resilient, adaptive immune system to be able to deal with whatever threats come to you from wherever, and have a few illnesses once in a while because of those people that don't have a ability to build an immune system. So it's an interesting thing how our policies generally go towards the weakest of us, and all the rest of the society literally is compromised as a result and gets sick because they don't have the exposure to this ability to get better. Or the other way around where, yeah, we'll have illness once in a while on rare occasions because everybody's healthy. So the word safety is really an interesting thing. Are we safer as a country because we kill everything and don't have strong immune systems? Or are we safer because we expose ourselves to some immune system exercise?
Yeah, like there's so much research about how kids who grow up on farms have stronger, more robust immune systems.
Eat some dirt, yeah. Right? Drink some milk.
Play with animals.
At the same time, the humanity of producing food for people has to come through and say, I don't want anybody to get sick. Mm-hmm. I don't care who it is. That's why we test for pathogens on our farm to make sure we don't have pathogens in the milk. As you receive the gift of biodiversity, it doesn't include the pathogenic part as well as the diversity. So it's wild, but not too wild. Mm-hmm. We want to rewild our gut, as Dr. Bruce Sturman says, to get that diversity of bacteria, which gives us that antibody effect of protecting ourselves from so many more broad threats versus just a little bit. So we have to rethink our policies in our country to protect all of us, and also the weakest of us at the same time. It's not easy.
So how common are food recalls in the food industry in general?
Well, right now they're happening every day. I mean, onion recalls, cantaloupe recalls, pasteurized milk recalls, Boar's Head deli meat recall, ice cream recalls. I mean, onions in McDonald's hamburger recalls. I mean, it's happening. My take on that is that's also an indication of how compromised our immune systems are as well. Mm-hmm. Because the FDA, is trying to make our foods sterile or lack of bacteria. And if they do that, it's considered safer. In doing that, you actually get in more trouble because then the people become more compromised because they don't have the experience of dealing with bacteria in their environments. The European Union has a completely different take on this. They allow listeria in their food. You don't see the listeria illnesses. You see a little bit here and there, but you've got an immunity for listeria. Here you don't. So people die from listeria here. So we have to think as a country, policy-wise, about biodiversity and whole food nutrition as our way forward. If we don't get that, then we're going to always be food rebels. We're going to be always against the grain. We need support from those in charge, and we need to tell them what to do by dollar voting, saying your choices don't work anymore because we're not going to buy it, that we want a whole food nutrition. We're not going to be nourished by sugars and fake foods and everything else that's out there that's terrible.
Well, Mark, we are in such an exciting time right now, and I'm really so optimistic about the future of health in America and where things are headed and just how things are changing so much at a consumer grassroots level. And I think that you and everything that you're doing is playing a huge role in that, and the education that you're providing about raw milk and just whole foods and health in general. So I'm really excited for our community to hear this episode and just to learn from you. How can people buy your products and follow along with everything that you're doing?
Well, I believe this is a we project, not a me project. This is a team of people building a community that's going in the right direction. How can people help here? Keep on buying raw milk and keep on buying chicken and buying all the wonderful things from their local farms or their farms that are connected to stores that they know their source, that don't have antibiotics, that don't have hormones, that are unprocessed and whole. Continue to do that. Dollar voting is the most powerful thing we can do in our country to direct where our country goes. So I think that's the most powerful thing we can do. And get to know your farmer if you can. They are deprived of social and economic support, and they need to have that relationship. It's very important for farmers to know people, not processors.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thanks for being here.
It's my pleasure.